2 hours ago, Allied Air Forces began an attack on military targets in Iraq and Kuwait.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is In the News.
Welcome to In the News on Holy Family Radio, where we bring you the news with a Catholic perspective. I'm your host, Eleanor Rossman, and joining us this week is Father John Trigilio. Long time no see.
Well, I saw you a few days ago.
Well, I know, but I mean, I should say on the program, we've missed you.
Oh, okay.
But I'm going to ask you to share with our listeners, if you don't mind, some of maybe the highlights of your recent trip with the seminarians. You just went to Italy.
Yes, we had a pilgrimage. We went to the Shrine of Padre Pio, which is in, we went to Pietrelcina, which is his hometown.
Is his body there?
His body is in San Giovanni Rotondo.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, so Pietrelcina is where he's born.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you see the house where he was born, and, you know, they were very, very poor family. In fact, his father left Italy, went to the United States to raise, to earn money so that he could go to the seminary.
The Padre Pio could go to the seminary. Wow,
yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay.
And he became a Capuchin friar, and he's buried in San Giovanni Rotondo, which is another town. And there's where his body is in state. And so we went to both those places, and we went to Loreto, where Pope Francis was just at the other day. We were there. It's where the Holy House, where the Blessed Mother used to live, it was transported to Loreto, Italy. And then our next stop was in Lanciano, where they had the Eucharistic miracle.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Where you can see the host that turned the flesh and the consecrated wine that turned into a globule of blood. And that's on display.
Does that happen every year, or how often does that?
Oh, no, that's all the time.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's always that state. That's not to be confused with St. January is
January,
San Gennaro.
So, mm-hmm.
His blood liquefies once a year,
okay,
on his feast day, but the Eucharistic miracle of Lanciano is all the time.
A perpetual. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can see where the host turned into flesh and where the precious blood literally turned into coagulated blood.
Wow. Could you see it up close enough that...
Yeah, they let you get real close. It's in a protected monstrance.
Wow.
And a container, but you can see it. And then from there we went to Rome and spent 3 days in Rome.
Sounds like a lovely trip. And the do you think it inspired the seminarians?
Oh, yeah, they were just overwhelmed. There was... Most of them, this was their first time over there.
Mm.
We had a few repeat visitors, but it was edifying to see them and the look on their face when they saw these things and the churches and, you know. Of course, when they went to see the Sistine Chapel, you know, their jaws just dropped.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Bugged out, yeah.
Yeah. Was it wall-to-wall people when you went into the Sistine Chapel?
Always, when you go to the Sistine Chapel.
It's so, yeah.
But it was manageable because we went in the first week of March.
Oh, right, off-season kind of, yeah.
Well, there's
if
still
there
a lot of Italians
a
and Japanese.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
French. But we're now Padre Pio... And Lanciano and Loreto, they're on the eastern side of Italy.
Right.
So that you had less crowds.
Yeah.
You still had some.
Yeah.
But Rome was packed.
Always, yeah. Father, let's talk about some of these things that are in the news very recently. I'm sure you've heard of this story, although you were away for a while, but the actor Jussie Smollett is essentially going free. He was the actor who said that there was a hate crime perpetrated against him by some white men early in the hours of about a couple months ago. Anyway, the story was that it came to be that he was the one that perpetuated this thing. He perpetrated it, paid these guys. Anyway, so he served 2 days of community service, and he made a plea deal with the Chicago AG's office. They dropped the charges. There were 12 or so felony charges, okay? Despite all of the evidence that was there, they just said, nah, you know, we don't think we're going to move forward with this. It's not a violent crime. Okay. Then you've got on the other side of the globe, Cardinal Pell, okay, sitting in jail, convicted of molesting minors with zero evidence. And he goes to prison for years. I mean, it makes people kind of scratch their head and say, where is justice? You know?
Oh, it does. Now, with that, with the guy here in the States, from what I saw yesterday, there was no necessary plea bargaining because he still said he didn't do anything. He's sticking to his story.
Well, they said it's, yeah.
I mean, from what I saw, the DA just said they're dropping the charges, which doesn't mean that he's not up for federal charges, because if it's true that he faked a letter threatening himself, mm-hmm. that's a federal offense. So that the federal government could go after.
Yeah.
This is just the city of Chicago that dropped the charges on him. But, the whole thing was very suspicious. But, you know, I tell people, too, you can't jump to conclusions. When he first came out with his story, mm-hmm. everybody said, oh, look, you know, these are these, white supremacists or, you know, these
Trump supporters. Yeah.
Yeah. And then now the story flipped, and it's flipping again. So the problem is, people, without knowing all the facts, I'm very hesitant to make any final decision on a lot of these things that come on the TV or that. Because remember that poor kid from Wisconsin,
the high school. It's Virginia.
Or no, Covington, Kentucky.
Covington, Kentucky, right.
You know, everyone jumps at conclusions without knowing all the facts. Mm-hmm. And like you said, with Cardinal Pell, the facts speak for themselves. There was no corroboration of any of the accusations. And in fact, there was incontrovertible evidence that he was nowhere in that vicinity, or where it allegedly took place could not have taken place, because it was in the middle. I mean, a cathedral sacristy is not like your parish sacristy that is small and confined.
Uh-huh.
And a cathedral sacristy is huge. And
it's kind of like Grand Central Station, isn't it?
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in between masses. So
yeah.
Tons and tons of witnesses there.
Right.
But it was a typical, as they say, kangaroo court,
mm-hmm.
which ironically took place in Australia.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was reading this in the National Catholic Register. You probably know this already, but in 2013, the Victoria Police launched Operation Tethering, it was called. That was to investigate Cardinal Pell, even though there had been no complaints against him. I mean, why would they do that if there was not a... Don't you need a complaint first? These things are so upside down.
Because we're looking at it from an American perspective.
Okay.
And remember, this is Australian law, which is similar, but it's not exactly the same as our jurisprudence. So, you know, we presume, like when I was up in Canada, you know, they're so similar to us, you presume people have freedom of religion.
Right.
Well, they don't. There is no guarantee of freedom of religion in Canada,
mm-hmm.
because I met a lady who got in trouble with the law because she put a statue of Mary on her front lawn and her Hindu neighbor complained and she had to take it away.
Wow. Yeah, I think
so
you're right about that.
What goes on in Australia, I mean, I don't think there was a bit of justice that took place with Cardinal Pell.
No.
And this seems like he was railroaded. And unfortunately, you know, I think the Vatican is just sitting back and watching.
Father, on to another story. Cardinal Danneels of Belgium recently passed away. He was a kind of controversial figure, wasn't he?
That's putting it mildly.
I'm trying to sort of teed up. I mean, okay, he was, well, you might call him liberal. But beyond that, I mean, he was very troubling. Can you think of any? He was appointed a cardinal by John Paul II, right? Even though he was known to be somewhat liberal then, but when did he really go off the tracks?
Well, I mean, you know, I didn't keep up on his career, but I know he was extremely progressive and liberal. And, you know, it's one thing to be, you know, in terms of opinion, mm-hmm. you know, there's like St. Thomas Aquinas used to say, non disputandum est, there's no argument in taste or opinion, but he sided with a lot of these fellows like Cardinal Marx.
Germany.
Yeah, they were advocating changing doctrine or changing discipline, you know, whether it's celibacy or ordination of women or just the whole ecclesiology is askew.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than just, you know, your taste in liturgical vestments.
Yeah.
Sometimes people, I mean, wrongly use that as a means of defining somebody. You know, well, you know, what kind of vestments do you wear don't necessarily identify your ideology.
Mm-hmm.
They may be somewhat indicative, but the main line here is the teaching and the philosophy of these fellows. And I can say it. I don't think you know, it was a puzzle why some of these guys were made cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
But even Pope Benedict, you know, admits that when he was a young priest and young bishop, he was a little bit left of center, and then he made a turn.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
So you got to be careful too that you don't pigeonhole somebody. But certainly with Danneels and some of the other guys, I think it was problematic, you know, the direction they were trying to push the church in.
Yeah. Father, we're going to stop now and take a break. When we come back, we're actually going to talk a little bit about Munich Cardinal Reinhard Marx, who you just mentioned in this first part. So stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute.
This is Holy Family Radio Manager Dan Steele. I want to thank you for listening to Holy Family Radio podcasts and broadcast, whether it's over the air at 720 on your AM dial or online streaming at 720WHYF.com. We appreciate your involvement in Central Pennsylvania's only Catholic radio station. But I must share with you, if we are to keep our ministry growing in the Harrisburg Diocese, we really need your help. We are a totally listener-supported nonprofit 501c3, and I'm asking you to prayerfully consider donating any amount you can to help us continue our work in spreading God's Word. Please go to our website at 720WHYF.com. Click on the donate button and follow the instructions. And thank you for helping to keep us on the air, and may God bless you.
We're back with Father John Trigilio, and as I mentioned in the earlier part of the program, I wanted to bring this issue up about Munich Cardinal Reinhard Marx. He's the president of the German Bishops Conference, and he's called celibacy and Catholic sexual morals, and this is a quote, an encumbrance we have to get rid of because they, quote, impede us to go into the future. Now, this was a talk he gave to a council of lay people, and of his archdiocese. What does he mean by that? I mean, why would he say the Catholic sexual morals is an encumbrance? You're a clergy. Why would he say that?
I don't know why he would say it, because it makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly contradicts what the church teaches. Because, you know, our sexuality, our Catholic sexual teaching is based on the whole thing of, you know, of the human person. I mean, you know, whether you use Pope John Paul's theology of the body or some other, you know, schema, the bottom line is that, you know, it's all part of the of who you are as a person. And as a person, we are moral people. You know, we make moral decisions, and they are either morally right or they're morally wrong. So, you know, it's only the you know, things that are involuntary, like blinking your eyes and, and things like that, or like, you know, your heartbeat. There's no moral moral character involved. But what I say with my mouth, what I look at with my eyes, what I do with my body, you know, there's moral implications because it involves the free will.
Yeah.
And anytime the free will is involved and it's a rational, deliberate choice that's made, then it enters into the realm of morality. And for him to say all this, because you know what they want to do? They want to make sexuality something that you have no control over. It's almost like your circulatory system, that it just operates by itself. Well, then that destroys your personhood.
Yeah.
Because then now you're an animal. Animals, you know, have sex out of instinct.
Right.
Okay. Human beings make choices, and they're moral choices. And if someone chooses to have sexual relations and they do it outside the confines of marriage, you know, then it's morally evil. It's a sin.
You know, one question I have for you is, why does the church in Germany have, it seems to me, like pockets of money? Is that because of the tax that is charged to anyone who identifies as a Catholic? Is that why
aspect is that the Catholics and the Lutherans, the Catholic Church and the Lutheran Church, get money depending on how the voters identify themselves, and they can designate that German tax money be given either to the Catholic Church or to the Lutheran Church for the works that they do, so that it's not just going to the church indiscriminately. It's to help with their schools and hospitals and things like that. Problem is, in the old days, the clergy were literally paid either completely or partially by the state. And because of that, they got a little bit too married to the state, to the government, or they also got a little cushy and were not dependent so much on the universal church, but more on the local or national church. And that's why you got a lot of these problems in those kind of countries where, you know, they see themselves more as German Catholics as opposed to as Catholics.
Yeah. And it seems to me that this Cardinal Marx seems to hold a lot of influence with our Holy Father. But let me just finish the last thing this quote that I have from Cardinal Marx. He went on to say, quote, "We do not need to wait for Rome. We have to go our own way. And why not a certain pressure? Why not to show a certain will to change? Otherwise, nothing will ever change." So they're leading in this regard. It's also true that in the case of Amoris Laetitia, the German bishops have already introduced the changes they've asked from the church. Is that correct? They already allow people in relationships that not married to receive Holy Communion and so forth. So he says,
well,
why
individual
not?
Bishops are, I've been told, individual bishops in Germany have been doing that. And that's not correct that they should be doing that, because even in Amoris Laetitia, you know, you're talking about a footnote.
Right.
That is that they're invoking, and a footnote is not the same as being in the body of the text. And there was no official declaration made according to canon law or to the catechism to that effect either. So to extrapolate and say, well, we know how this is to be implemented, you know, that's their opinion. And the problem is they're not basing it on the perennial consistent practice of the church, which has been that, you know, you do not extend communion to those who are not in a valid marriage.
How does this concept that I think we've been hearing a lot of with Pope Francis, of this synodal church, does that have any some play in this thinking with Cardinal Marx and the church in Germany that would kind of allow them to move on their own?
Certainly it's similar to how the Lutheran Church works, because the Lutheran Church doesn't have their own pope.
Right.
They have Lutheran bishops, and they get together at a synod or a council, mm-hmm. and they make decisions in a corporate way, so to speak. Just like in the Anglican Communion, the Archbishop Canterbury is a figurehead,
yeah.
but he doesn't make decisions that are binding, say, on the Episcopal Church United States or the Anglican Church in South Africa.
Yeah.
It's only in the Catholic Church we have the tradition, going back to apostolic times of St. Peter, that the Pope is the single head of the Church, and you know, the bishops are local leaders, but they're also under his jurisdiction. So the Pope is one who appoints bishops and can also remove bishops. That doesn't happen in the Lutheran synod, mm-hmm. or in other Christian denominations. So the synodal, when you use it in the Catholic context, we have a tradition of having, like, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. They get together.
Yeah.
They're authorized to make certain decisions, but they also make public statements. They're not magisterial, though.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the things they decide, if it's binding in conscience on the Catholic faithful, has to have approval from Rome.
Yeah.
They do not issue things on their own authority.
Okay. So this is a touchy thing, because it seems as if our Holy Father is extending, you know, this ability for local dioceses to make decisions, you know.
Well, I wouldn't say, I would not, I'd say it appears that way.
Yeah.
But
you don't,
he did not officially, formally say, we're leaving up to you boys to decide. He is extending, at least it appears,
mm-hmm.
Some more
autonomous.
Again, we use the term subsidiarity.
Yeah.
Where things that can be done at the lowest level, mm-hmm. should take place at the lowest level. So, for instance, when I was a pastor, I decided what time to have Saturday night mass.
Mm-hmm.
The bishop didn't send out an edict saying everybody has to have a 4:30 mass, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The bishop can and does say what's the earliest you can have a Saturday night mass, but he doesn't give you every parish their mass schedule. And likewise, when the bishops get together, they don't say to all the bishops, hey, you have to do this, this, and this. They don't even agree on when they have confirmation.
Yeah.
And the holy days are depending on what region you're in. So
right.
There is room for subsidiarity,
okay.
but you have to also have the hierarchical structure, where certain things have to be decided at the top from Rome, from the Holy See, in terms of universal law, canon law, and also divine worship, the sacred liturgy.
You know, just a last final thought on this situation in Germany. I've heard people say that, you know, maybe we shouldn't be taking too much advice from Cardinal Marx, because the diocese in Germany are pretty much a shambles. I mean, nobody's going to church. The rundown local churches. So, you know, it's just a little strange to me why this Cardinal Marx seems like he can move.
Well, he gets the publicity. That's why.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, if you're a bishop who's doing what you're supposed to be doing, and you're holy and devout, and you're running a good diocese, you don't get the publicity.
Father,
when you're out in left field and saying crazy things, they write articles about you.
Yeah. Before we end our program today, I want to ask you this. I was reading that someone attempted to kiss the Holy Father's ring, and he wouldn't let him. Now, is that a big deal? Why should people want to kiss the ring? What are they doing when they're kissing the Holy Father's ring?
Well, I saw that video, and it was awkward, to say the least.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's the Pope's decision. I mean, it's not an article of faith. It's not canon law. that you must kiss the Pope's ring, but to do so, mm-hmm. it's because you're showing respect and reverence for the office.
Right. Okay.
Because the fisherman's ring that he wears, he was given the day that he was installed as Pope.
Uh-huh.
It's just a symbol of his authority.
Right.
And to kiss his ring means that you're saying, I submit myself to the authority of the successor of St. Peter.
Okay.
That's all it means. You're not adoring or worshiping him any more than if you curtsied to Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah.
That's not adoring or worshiping her. Now, in the ancient times, they used to kiss the feet of the Holy Father,
mm-hmm.
and that was later bumped up to kissing his ring. Now, some bishops don't like their rings
yeah,
kissed.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And some don't mind. And again, the more traditional Catholics who do that, that's their option.
Mm-hmm.
I would think, you know, the bishops and the Holy Father, you know, why deny someone, you know, that's their... But again, it's his hand,
yeah.
So if he doesn't want everybody smooching his ring, you know. But I think they ought to make that a state, or you know, let people know.
Yeah.
Holy Father asks that you not do that. Mm-hmm. Instead of snapping it away from people, like I saw on the video. But
yeah.
That's his choice. I mean, you know, it's not he's not violating the catechism
okay.
or. Any sacred tradition that mm-hmm. way.
Yeah, it was awkward, and I just thought,
it's very awkward.
I'm going to ask you to clarify why we do it and what the big
I've
deal
seen
is.
Some bishops do that, you know. Ours is very respectful. He lets, if somebody wants to, then he, you know, acquiesces to it.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't insist that people
no,
do it.
No, he's not holding his
but
hand
seen,
out when you...
I've seen bishops twist people's arms to make sure they couldn't do it.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Father, we are out of time for this program, but we thank you for being with us, and we invite our listeners to join us every Thursday at noon on AM 720 on Holy Family Radio for In the News with Father John Trigilio. Father, thank you so much, and God bless you, and we will talk to you again next week.
Yeah, happy Lent.
Thank you.